You remember to turn things on? Sorry. It was me. I forgot to turn my mic back on. Lord, I just pray that you're here to help me be cognizant of what it is that you want to communicate. Let your presence be here to communicate your will. And I pray that in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Listen, we've been doing a short series here since the first of the year, kind of thinking in terms of the kind of lives we want to live as we go into the next year. And we've called it Wise Life because our theme has been wisdom, how we can live according to God's wisdom. And as we stated earlier, when we talk about wisdom, we're not talking about just gathering more information or having enough information to answer questions properly, but we're speaking about God's wisdom, God's pattern for life, what it is that God intended life to be like, in contrast with human wisdom, which is according to scriptures leading towards a dead end, which is a life that is not including God's plan or purposes. And all of this is asking, what is the best kind of life to live? What's the kind of life? What's the world that we want to live in going to be like? What is our life going to look like as we live it? And that's what wisdom plays a part of. The book of Proverbs is all about God's wisdom, God's pattern for life. And so we've been looking at what Proverbs says about wisdom. Find your way to, if you've got a Bible or a Bible app and you want to follow along, I'm going to be doing these scriptures kind of rapid fire this morning, so I'm going to be putting them on the screen. But man, if you want to follow along, if you'll find your way to Proverbs now. Last week, we looked at the way that Proverbs personified wisdom. We met Lady Wisdom and looked at all the different ways in which she called to us to live a life according to God's purposes and God's plans. And we looked at how, you know, wisdom is for everybody. It's for everybody. It's for all of us. It's not just the religious people of the world or the scholars or anything. And we also saw that she was out where everybody was, in the thick of the traffic, out in the main streets. And so we saw that God's wisdom is for everything. It's for all aspects of our lives, not just when we're here at church, not just when we're, you know, trying to be spiritual on some level, but it's where we live, where we work, where we go to school. God's wisdom, that is God's pattern for life, is applicable to all those places in which we live life. We read about how God used wisdom, that is, he invested this aspect of himself into all of creation. All this world was made according to his wisdom, and it's his wisdom that's going to illuminate for us what his intended pattern for life is supposed to be like. Now, we've talked also about how God's wisdom has been disrupted by the introduction of sin, and how human wisdom, the desire to know good and evil without knowing God, human wisdom obscures God's wisdom. And this broken world has a way of introducing a static that makes it difficult for us to recognize or to know what God's wisdom is in given situations. So God calls us then to seek his wisdom. It means that we're not automatically going to know these things. It means we have to seek it out. We have to look for it. We have to examine or to even challenge our own thinkings, our own patterns. We have to employ critical thinking. Just because the popular culture, even the political culture around us says this or that is good or evil, is it really good or evil according to God's intended pattern? What is good and evil according to God's description? Because remember, the whole thing went stupid when human beings determined they wanted a knowledge of good and evil without a knowledge of God. So it's so important that we factor that into the whole thing. What is that then? To really focus on this, and this is what we talked about last week, because a lot of these concepts become very abstracted for us. We talk about wisdom and finding wisdom and how we're going to employ this in life. And so we talked about how Jesus then becomes the model of wisdom for us. Jesus became wisdom in the flesh. And so when we look at his life, we look at how he interacted with his fellow human beings, when we look at how it is that he, you know, lived his life, we find for ourselves the pattern for wisdom. And so we can even employ that old adage. You know, what would Jesus be doing in a situation like we're in? How would Jesus respond? What would his intentions be in these things? These are the ways in which we're going to discover wisdom. So that's what we've been focusing on these past couple weeks. This morning, we're going to look at another aspect of God's wisdom that we want to attend to, something that's very important for us, especially, I feel like, in our day and age, especially in light of what's developed technologically and everything else over the last 30 or 40 years. And it's something that we have to attend to. And if we're looking to find a wise life heading into 2019, then this is something we definitely want to attend to and pay attention to in how it is that we live. One of the things that is remarkably unique about human beings is our ability to communicate via language. I mean, honestly, that sets us apart from everything else, every other observable thing in the created world. I realize there are maybe some rudimentary forms of communication that we may observe, but nothing as complex and deep and profound as we find in the human ability to communicate via language. That is just phenomenal when we really think about it. And honestly, it's something that we take for granted. You've heard me lament about that all the time. Language is one of those things that is such a magnificent gift given to us, and we treat it so flippantly so often. I don't think we appreciate it enough. But, you think about this. I don't know if you've looked into these types of things before or not, but how many words would you say that we as human beings use in any given day? Has anybody looked into that? You know? Nope, nope. Nope, 50. Well, some of us, yeah. You never talk. I use my 50 words. They say... You're dismissed. 52 words. This is why my battery... This is why this was off earlier. I had turned it on before. It wasn't my fault. It was the battery's fault. All right. What are we talking about? Words. Okay. So they say that we use 10,000 words a day. I have no idea who's sitting around counting that, but this is what they say. That's an average for an average human being. And if you think about it, 10,000 words is a lot. That is a lot of words. And here's the thing. And we've talked about this before, that language is powerful. It's extremely powerful, even in its basest form. In the basest means of being able to communicate to another person, it still carries with it power. Whether it's a poop emoji or a classical poem, there is power involved in our ability to be able to communicate. Language has the power to be able to create or destroy. And we've seen that played out certainly over the history of the world. And you think about it. So, just what we say out loud in any given day has 10,000 possibilities to either do good or to destroy. Not to mention all the things that we write, given the rise of our connectivity via social media and that sort, and texting and that kind of technology. If you will, if you'll turn to Proverbs 18:21. And I'm going to, like I said, put it up on the screen. I'll be flying through these things, so you may not always be able to get there as fast as you can. But Proverbs has so much important stuff to say about the use of words. Proverbs recognizes the power of language. It's one of those things that, it's just a given in its worldview or understanding of how the world works and the human capacity for language and the inherent power of that. But let's look at what Proverbs 18 verse 21 says. I'm reading out of the NLT. It says, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it, that is who love life, will eat its fruit. In other words, will use that tongue for the purposes of life. Here's the thing. I raised four kids who were all about a year apart, which means, A, I should be getting a medal somewhere along the line, but B, it means that now, I want you to wrap your minds around this. For 4 years straight, we were teaching kids how to drive in my household. And I blame this gray beard for that, because that happened around that time. And you know how it is. You have to be trained how to drive a car. And by the time my youngest daughter was learning how to drive a car, she had, she had five other experienced drivers in the vehicle with her screaming at her about what it is that she needed to do. She was so traumatized. It was actually hilarious, but, sad. It could be sad, I suppose, looked at from, but so So here's the thing. It's one of those things that, you know, if you've ever taught a teenager how to drive, it's not easy. I mean, it's one of those, you know, white knuckle experiences for a while there. You go through it. But there's a reason, you know, there's a reason we don't hand 10-year-olds the keys to the minivan to just take, you know, take off, go somewhere, you'll figure it out as you go. No, we know that that's not appropriate because that's dangerous. The person has to learn how to control that vehicle and learn the necessary caution that's needed in order to keep, you know, from hurting themselves or hurting other people with that vehicle. And Proverbs is warning us that words have a similar kind of power. Something that's so easy for us to take for granted. And if we want a fruitful, that is, if we want a meaningful, purposeful, contributing life, we're going to use the power of language wisely. And what we mean by that is according to God's wisdom, according to what it is that God intended language for. Words have power based on the intention and energy that they carry. You know, I think about some of the greatest moments in my life have been summed up with three words or less. You know, I love you, or I do, or it's a girl. Those are life-changing moments for me. Just a few words that were transforming and so powerful for me. But I can also attest to the negative effects of words as well. Someone can say something that takes 3 seconds to say and will take 3 decades for a person to work through and come to grips with. Language is that powerful, very powerful. One reason for that is because, I believe, is because it has its origin in God. Language, you know, emotes from God. God used language to bring all of creation into existence. That's how it all got here. God said, let there be light, and boom, things are happening. In Exodus, when God is reintroducing himself to the human race, he gives Israel a written word to reintroduce himself through. He gives them language. He communicates through language to let them know who he is. Then in John chapter 1, and you've been hearing me read this a lot lately, but in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. Meaning that Jesus is the very embodiment of God's communication of love to a dying world. So language carries with it the inherent power of the Creator God behind its institution. Words have power to build up and to create, and they've got the power to tear down and to destroy and to decimate things. That's why we need chokmah. That's why we need God's wisdom to know how it is to use this powerful tool of language. And whether it's words that are spoken face to face as we're communicating with our fellow human being, or whether it's words that are written down in text or on social media or emails, we need wise words. Because as I said, words spoken face to face carry power. Words written carry power. And Proverbs has a lot to say about our words. And this is not just about having good communication skills in order to be able to get our way in life. It's about finding God's pattern for life. And what it is that he intended this language to be able to do. Now, we're not going to be able to cover all the stuff that Proverbs says about words, and it would be a great study that you could do at some point if you wanted to look at that, because you'll be amazed at how much Proverbs does have to say about our use of language. But let's just look at a few characteristics. That's what we'll look at this morning. Just a few characteristics of what constitute wise words according to Proverbs. So in Proverbs 29:11, and like I said, I'll put this on the screen, but it says, fools vent their anger, but the wise quietly hold it back. And in Proverbs 10:19, and this is a good one, and I'm going to read it from the Good News Translation, because I really like the way this is worded here. It says, the more you talk, the more likely you are to sin. If you are wise, you will keep quiet. And so one of the very first things that we can recognize about the wise use of speech has to do with restraint. We use our words wisely when we learn to restrain those words, remembering that this is a powerful tool that we have, and it carries with it so much inherent power. As you would with anything, you use it with a certain caution and restraint. Venting, it talks about, you know, venting their anger. It's like saying, you know, ranting. When we go on these rants or whatever, giving vent to our outrage, you know, and the way we do that, by and large, is through words, what it is that we communicate. So the first characteristic of these wise words is restraint. Proverbs 21:23 says, watch your tongue and keep your mouth shut and you will stay out of trouble. The better part of how we are wise with words has to do with being selective about the words that we use. Selective about our speech. Sometimes the wise thing to do is just to keep our mouths shut or off the keyboard or thumbs off a screen, whatever it may be. Sometimes the wiser course of action has to do with not saying anything. But it's not easy. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that is not, you know, I say something like that, but that is not an easy thing to accomplish. I mean, in our present culture, human wisdom has sort of set self-expression as like one of the ultimate goods that we have. Well, you know, I have an opinion. I need to let everyone know what my opinion is, or what will happen if they don't know. I mean, and those opinions seem to be in the form of outrage more often than not lately. You know, I've got an opinion about conservatives, or I've got an opinion about millennials, and everyone needs to hear it. That'll fix it. And, you know, so we just open up Facebook and we start blasting that stuff out there, not even thinking about the power of that, the power behind what's being communicated there. Well, I didn't really even say it. It's just a meme. I just passed it along. It's still powerful and it's still communication. And things are happening that we're not always seeing. We've seen it over and over and over. People, you know, people lose jobs, stars lose shows, opinions get tweeted and shared, and opinions get formed, and the backlash becomes profound from these sorts of things. And of course, I know sometimes we'll just say, well, you know, we've just gotten so sensitive. We're all so sensitive about it, and nobody can say anything. And that may be a possibility. That may be part of it, but I honestly believe there's something underlying that. I believe that sensitivity is actually a symptom of something else. And, you know, remember what the proverb said. The more you talk, the more likely sin is. And maybe that sensitivity is a symptom of something else that's going on here. This increased ability to communicate and blast our opinions everywhere may not be the most healthy thing. Now listen, and understand what I'm saying, because here in our country, we have the freedom of speech. And that is a right that we have as Americans, and it's an important right. It's a cornerstone of democracy to have the right, the freedom of speech. But just because it's a right that's granted to us by our nation does not necessarily mean it's right according to God's wisdom. You see what I'm saying? And those are things that we have to keep in mind. It doesn't mean that, you know, just because I'm allowed to do this doesn't mean that this is what wisdom is going to dictate in any given situation. So restraint is part of being wise with our words, not necessarily talking all the time. Maybe before we, you know, get our thumbs blazing across a screen to shout our opinion or weigh in on the latest outrage, we should ask ourselves, and it may not be a bad thing to do, to ask ourselves before we hit that little upload button or post button, to say, is this chokmah? Is this wisdom? Is this gonna build someone up? Will this be creative? Is this going to bring peace to the world around me if I say this? Is this the right platform or time or place for me to share my opinion about this? It's so quiet in here, but I know that this may sound like heresy, but we don't always have to share our thoughts, our opinions on social media with everybody. It sounds crazy, I know, but there's God's wisdom and there's human wisdom, and we want that life that's tapping into that fruitful, good, peaceful, uplifting kind of wisdom that God encoded into this world. So Proverbs is telling us to have wise words. We need to have a filter, a wisdom filter over what it is that we say. All right, look at Proverbs 26, verses 18 and 19. Just as damaging as a madman shooting a deadly weapon is someone who lies to a friend and then says, I was only joking. So here's another characteristic of wise words, and it has to do with honesty. We use our words wisely when we are honest and trustworthy with our words. And I know you may start shutting down at this point, saying, yes, I know I'm supposed to be honest. I know I'm not supposed to lie. I've heard that my whole life, Rob. I know the rules, so can we move on? But that's the thing. Proverbs isn't just laying out a bunch of rules for us to follow. You know, make sure you do this and don't do that. But it's talking about God's pattern for life and how these broken human patterns sometimes obfuscate what it is that God intended for us. And so we've got to be conscious about our words, how it is that we're using our words, because there are ways that we can be dishonest in our communication and not even realize we're doing it. Ways that we've just kind of follow patterns that we fall into because this is just kind of the way the world works, and we're not even conscious or realizing that our words are not necessarily honest or helpful in that. One example is like the one we just read here in Proverbs. It deals with being passive aggressive with our words. And what that means is being unfriendly. This is what the proverb is saying. Being unfriendly towards someone, but doing it in such a way that it sounds like we're being friendly with them. And that's what this passage is talking about. We speak negatively or lie about someone or about something and then say, I was just kidding. I was making a joke. And look, I am not talking to you guys in this. If you get something out of it, that's fine. But I am talking to me because this applies to me more than anybody that I know of right now. But you know how we can do that. Being hostile with someone, but doing it in a way that it seems like we're being nice. An example. Some friends are, gathered around. They're deciding where they want to go to a movie together. Let's go to a movie. And one in the group says, here's a suggestion. Let's go to this movie. And another person in the group says, oh, I would love to go to a movie that you choose again. And so you know what's going on in a situation like that. They're saying with their mouths, I'd love to go to the movie, but what they mean is, I hate your choice in movies, and I think I hate hanging out with you. But they're too afraid to say that in honest communication. So they guise it in this other thing. Or like in the proverb, we cover up hostility with humor. Like if you say, just kidding, at the end of something, we're not accountable for anything that came before it somehow, And again, I'm talking to me in this, hey, nice shirt, did you get it out of a dumpster? Just kidding. But that just saying, just kidding, doesn't erase the insult that came with that, right? It doesn't erase what impact that could have on another human being. What all this really is, and this is what I've been thinking about this week, if you drill down to its core, it's deception. We need to use wise words. We want God's pattern for life to flow through our words and what it is that we're saying. And that's not going to happen in dishonesty. And listen, this is not to get us all freaked out and afraid to talk to each other. Rob said I got to use wisdom and I don't know what to say. So, but it is meant to get us thinking, to remember again the power of our language, the power of our ability to communicate, and so to think about what it is that we're saying. Think about the words that we're using and how we're using them. I come from a long line of passive-aggressive communicators, and it's not always easy for me to spot it when I'm falling into those patterns. But if we can start being conscious of what it is that we're saying and how it is that we're saying it, we can trust that God will prompt us towards better communication, towards communication that's in sync with His wisdom. And I believe He will. I believe that's what we talked about before. The Holy Spirit has been granted to us to guide us into all truth. And so if we're conscious and we put that before God, set a watch on my mouth, keep the doors of my lips today, Lord, then God will do that. He'll prompt us and alert us. Listen, you don't want to word it that way. Be honest in what you're saying here. Honest expressions are part of wisdom. Okay, still in Proverbs chapter 26, we'll read verse 20. It says, fire goes out without wood, and quarrels disappear when gossip stops. So another characteristic of wise words is still along this line. It has to do with trust. We use our words wisely when we're communicating in a way that is trustworthy, when we're trustworthy with our words. Now, the New Living Translation that I read that out of is not a literal translation, so it's giving us what the intent of the speech is, so it's providing for us the word gossip in there. But in the literal translation, like the ESV, it says quarrels cease when there is no whisperer. And it's not that the NLT is wrong, they're right about what that's trying to communicate, but I like that word whisperer better because it's more broad in its sense and it carries with it just this awesome picture in this. It paints a picture, a whisperer. Now, when we talk about a whisperer, we're not talking about somebody who can train a dog really well or someone who has laryngitis, but it's talking about someone who likes to see conflict stirred up, but doesn't like to be in conflict directly, so they whisper about everything that's going on. And whisper words come in two languages, either gossip, which is identified in the NLT, or slander. They spread news. The idea is it spreads news that is meant to be kept personal, to be kept quiet. And they talk about people, but they haven't talked with people about this, about the people involved. Proverbs 16:28 says, a troublemaker plants seeds of strife. Gossip separates the best of friends. Again, words are powerful. They can ruin friendships. They can destroy communities. We've seen that kind of thing happen. If they're not used with wisdom, our words have this intense power all around us all the time. Well, so what do we do? How do we handle something like this? Well, we use our words then in trustworthy ways. If, you know, that means that we're not going to break confidences and spread rumors. We're not going to use our language to communicate something that we don't know is true or doesn't need to be shared with someone else. Let's make it a goal not to talk about someone in a way that we wouldn't talk about them if they were there present with us. I got a great example of this from my own life. I hate it. But I was, you know, when I was a teenager still, just coming out of my teens, I guess, early 20s, I was working at a big department store, and there was a manager there at that store, and he was somebody who was not well-liked. You know, that happens in life and in those kind of situations. And it was somebody that I had a lot of conflicts with personally. And this manager had a particular, I'm going to just say a peculiar way of talking, a little speech, you know, hiccup that was easy to identify and recognize. And so I was there in the break room one day with all the co-workers around, and I started imitating him. It was an easy thing to mock. I was imitating his voice and doing all these things and ordering people around, and everybody was laughing, and it was so great. And at the end of that little show that I put on there in the break room, I said, you know, when I grow up, I wanted to be just like Mr. So-and-so. So later on that day, I had to go talk to Mr. So-and-so to see if I could get off work early because I had something that I had to go do. Oh, no, it's worse. Because he said, yeah, no problem. Yeah, take as much time as you need. That's fine. And I was kind of surprised. I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. And as I turned around to leave, he said, you know, when I grow up, I want to be just like you. No! So you suddenly realized, okay, so he was there. I don't know where he had been. He was somewhere, maybe just outside the hall, but he heard all those words I said about him that I would never have said when he was there with me. And it, man, it shook me up. I mean, I hated it. I just hated that feeling. And the reason that I feel so terrible, and I didn't process it then, but I can see it now, is that my words disrupted the good that God intends for life. My words disrupted that ability to be able to build up and encourage, and instead were tearing down. And they were untrustworthy words at that point. And that's why it was making me so sick, because it was out of sync with what it is that God intends for life. We don't want to speak about someone in a way that we wouldn't if they were present with us. But also, like it said in Proverbs 26, for lack of fire, for lack of wood, a fire goes out. So we want to be the kind of people who, you know, even if we hear something that sounds to us as though it's like something that shouldn't be shared, we're not going to be people who will take that then and share that somewhere else. We're going to let the fire goes out there. There's no fuel for that thing. It's going to quit at that point. So we're not going to be the kind of people who then take that and share it with somebody else. Not even in, you know, not even in some spiritual disguise like a prayer request. Have you heard what happened to so-and-so? You know, just telling you so you can pray, but, you know, spread it around if you will. You know, we don't want to do that. For lack of wood, the fire goes out. We may hear stuff, you know, none of us are good at this. We've said that before. And we may hear something. It doesn't mean we have to judge the person that we hear it from or whatever, but we make that determination because we have no control over what somebody else is going to say, but we have control over what we are going to do with that, right? So we'll be the people. We'll say, I'm going to be the person that this goes out here. This ends here. This isn't going to go beyond and potentially harm somebody else. So, you know, if we do hear something, I realize you could be thinking through it. What if I hear something that's serious and it needs to be addressed? Well, okay, if that's the case, Matthew lays out for us the pattern for that. Go to the person who's involved. Talk with them. Hear their side of the story. It's amazing how different everything sounds when you actually hear the other person's side of what's going on, how you get the fuller picture, and oftentimes things just diminish right at that point. But if there is issues, are there, you know, things that have to be attended to, there are avenues for doing that sort of thing, like within the church, or whether it's at work or schools or whatever, there are people who are in leadership positions. We can get together, talk about these things, but resolve them in ways that are healthy and beneficial, not by just spreading around something that we've heard, because lives have been ruined by that sort of thing. So God calls us to be wise with our words by being trustworthy with our words. That's what puts us in sync with God's wisdom. Back to Proverbs 26, verse 21. It says, a quarrelsome person starts fights as easily as hot embers light charcoal or fire lights wood. So the last characteristic, and it's not the last characteristic by any means, but the last one we're going to have time to look at today, has to do with peace. We use our words wisely when we're using them to bring peace to any situation, to any given situation. You know, one of the things that Jesus identified is going to be the earmarks of those who are his followers, saying, blessed are the peacemakers. That's the whole idea, those who are actively seeking to bring peace. You know, some people... You know, I don't know. Some people just like to argue. My dad was kind of like that. But, you know, and it's a personality kind of thing, I guess. And that's okay. But I mean, sometimes some people are just contrarian. Like almost anything that comes up is going to be an argument. Hey, good morning. Why? What makes it so good? Why is this morning any better than yesterday morning? Or, you know, along those lines. I'm sorry. But there's a place for debating an issue and making an argument for a position. But that's what we have to figure out with our words. Is this really important? Is this argument going to lead towards edification? Or is this argument going to be able to resolve in some way in which we're going to find peace? Is it good for anyone to be involved in this debate? Because by and large, what's our motive for getting into an argument anyway? What are we arguing for? To win. We want to be proven right. I'm right. You got to see that. Look at me. I mean, you know, so what we have to do and what God's wisdom calls us to do is to care more about people, about the people that are around us, the people that maybe we're communicating with, but care more about them than being right. And if we do that, if we actually care more about people then our being right, then we're going to speak peace. We're going to speak calmly. Even if we disagree with someone, we're going to disagree with grace in that. We don't have to be proven right if we belong to Jesus. If we really believe that, if we really embrace that reality, we don't have to any other need for affirmation for ourselves is coming from a dysfunctional place. It's coming from outside of the reality of God's love for us expressed through Jesus. When we use hurtful or untrue or hostile words, we're just revealing that we've got wounded hearts that we have not allowed God's love to heal yet. And we're letting those things, those wounds, dictate how it is that we interact with each other. Our words then are important not because we have to master some discipline in order to make God happy with something, but because they reveal a heart issue. As a man is in his heart, he's speaking that thing. So as a person has going on inside of them, they're going to be communicating that and revealing that. And if we're constantly arguing or attacking or getting on the defensive, we're revealing an unsettled heart in this. Something is amiss in this. I'm afraid in this. I'm afraid that if I'm proven wrong, that somehow I'm diminished to that level. Our words can identify what's going on in our hearts. They can reveal what we understand our own identity to be. And that's the real thing. That's really what it all comes down to. Because there's only one understanding of our identity that's going to resolve all of these things. Because everything points back to this. There's only one thing we need to know for sure, something that Paul knew for sure, only one thing he knew when he went to Corinth. There's one thing we need to know about ourselves that's going to resolve all of these things as it touches how we communicate and how we even use God's wisdom. What is it, Rob? Well, let's do something today. I want us to all join together in one voice and speak truth together. I want us to all say at the same time something that's profoundly true and changes everything, can change the world around us if we really, really believed it. What I want to do is I want us all to say, I'm loved by God, and I want us to all say it together because it's the most profoundly true thing that you could say in any given situation. Are you willing to do that? Can we do that together? All right, let's say it all together. I am loved by God. Wow, you almost sounded like you believed that. And that is really cool because that actually does my heart good. But let's do it one more time and let's declare this as truth. This is a defining truth. Let's say it together. I am loved by God. Woo! Do you feel the power of that? You sense what's in that, that truth being spoken, that word that's true? That's awesome, man. And if we know that, if we'll embrace that, if we'll embrace that as a reality, all of my flaws, all of my inability to even speak right, it's none of that matters. God loves me. I don't have to prove myself somehow. I don't have to do all these things that human wisdom, a knowledge of good and evil apart from a knowledge of God, all of that stuff tries to do to secure self. I don't have to do that because I know that I'm loved by God. And if that's what our identity is built on, then the fights and the squabbles and all of those petty little mean things begin to fall by the wayside because we know we're valuable to Christ. We know we're valuable to Creator God who knows us, who knows the number of hairs on our head, who cares about us, who has a plan and a purpose, even in a life that's jacked up beyond all recognition. God has a plan and a purpose in it. Whether we see it in this side of it or not, something is going on and God is involved and He loves us. So our words are powerful and they reveal so much about us. And if we're submitting to God's wisdom, finding life the way He intended it to be lived, our words are going to reveal that pattern, and our words can reveal God's wisdom in this world. Our words can become God's word embodied in this experience of life. So let's live in God's chokmah, in God's wisdom. Let's believe we are loved, and from that position of knowledge of God's love, let's use our words wisely. Right on? All right, very cool. Why don't you stand up with me, if you will, please?